This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A bit later, we'll talk about how to curb a flu pandemic and tips for celebrating Pi Day 314. But up first, you may remember this fossil find from a few years ago. It was really an interesting story about scientists discovering bones of a tiny hominid on the Indonesian island of Flores. The scientists said that Flores man, barely 3 feet tall, and with a brain no bigger than a grapefruit, was a new species not related to modern humans at all. They called it, for lack of a better descriptive word, a hobbit. But not all scientists were convinced, and ever since, researchers in the field have been debating the place of Flores man on the human family tree. And this week, a new fossil find adds fuel to the debate. Because another team of scientists discovered bones from a population of tiny people on another Pacific island, this one in Micronesia. And these tiny people are similar in some ways to Flores man and in other ways to modern humans. So does this finding add more weight to the argument that the hobbits were another species or not? Well, the researchers published their findings in the journal Public Library of Science 1, and joining me today to talk about the study is its lead author, Lee Berger, associate professor and reader in human evolution and the public understanding of science at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, South Africa. He joins us today by phone from Washington. Welcome to the program, Professor Berger.
Thank you very much.
I set up the debate over Flores man in the introduction. Its discoverers say it represents a new species, but not everyone agrees. Is what does your new evidence add to this debate?
Well, basically, Ira, we have dropped sort of the population everyone was looking for right into the laps of the scientists. And I think that depending on what side of the debate that those various scientists fall on is how they're going to interpret it. In simple terms, we have found one of the smallest populations of humans that has ever existed on the island of Palau, and they carry with them a lot of traits that surprisingly were previously considered to be primitive to the human lineage in relatively high frequencies.
Mm-hmm. So that adds, so if you want to believe this is a sister, so to speak, population to the other find, then you have fuel for that argument.
I think it's a little more complex than that. What we have really argued in the journal PLOS is that these humans, and we're calling them Homo sapiens, are an adaptation of island dwarfism, which has never really been demonstrated before in modern humans. In that adaptation over time, what we see is a lot of very odd features popping up, things like reduced chin, enormous teeth, a bar over the orbits that we call a superorbital torus, small eyes, and other characters that were used initially to argue that the hobbit, Homo floresiensis, was a separate species. What ours don't have is a very, very tiny grapefruit-sized brain. Ours have a brain right at the bottom end, it looks like, of modern human variation, if not a little bit below.
So you're saying that these differences developed because they were so isolated from other human populations?
That's right. Part of it would probably be isolation. Another would be what we call founder effect. That is that when whatever the starting population had, the few people that were probably trapped on this island 3,000 to 4,000 years ago, that's what the majority of people ended up with a few generations down the line.
Mm-hmm. You found lots of fossil remains in a burial cave, correct?
We actually have two burial caves, and quite literally there are thousands and thousands of remains. It really is unbelievable to see. I had never personally seen anything like that. To give you an idea of the magnitude of it, in a test trench we put in of 1 meter square by 50 centimeters deep, we recovered more than 1,200 human remains, and that is literally the ground is comprised of ground-up human bones.
I know there's a really interesting story about you, a vacation, an accident, and how you found all of this.
Absolutely. My wife had actually picked Palau because it was the last place on Earth that you could find a fossil. She had actually guaranteed it. She realized it was a young island. I'm a keen diver, and I always end up on my vacations wandering about looking at rocks and bones and such, or and spoiling the vacation. She picked Palau because there was no way there would be anything there. On the last day, we were out kayaking, and the kayak guide says, "What do you do?" And I told him, and he said, "I know where there's a cave with old bones." And I said, "Great." I thought they might be Japanese soldiers or American soldiers. A huge battle was fought on the island of Palau. But when I walked into that cave, he had piled up these little bones on a rock neatly, and there was a face that was smaller than the palm of my hand. It was minute. I immediately knew it was something very special from my work in Africa, and I tried to take pictures and using my wedding ring as a scale and try not to be too excited. 6 weeks later, after a grant from the National Geographic Society's mission program, I'm back in Palau with a team, and we found dozens of these things, hundreds and thousands of bones. It was one of the most incredible things that's ever occurred to me.
So how does your wife pick your next vacation spot?
I let her pick everyone, I'll tell you that, from now on.
And there's probably going to be a National Geographic special coming out.
That's right, Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time, Mystery Skulls of Palau on the National Geographic Channel. One of the really incredible things was that because everyone was involved in this from right at the beginning. You can actually watch us as we go through the kind of ups and downs as we first think we have something, then think we don't, and think we have something and think we don't. It's quite fun.
Why is it naturally hard for archaeologists to believe that there could be another species of humans that once existed?
I think, though, that, you know, the important thing here is that we start getting a grip on human variation. It is remarkable how little understanding we have of just how far you can push the variation in modern humans. And one of the reasons for that is we don't have a lot of good examples of extinct human populations that have undergone isolation and thus some evolutionary adaptation. What I can tell you now is that the islands of the Indo-Pacific are probably full of this kind of experiment. And it really is where we've got to spend some time exploring, finding out what these islands hold and what they can tell us about what makes a new species. How far does Homo sapiens stretch?
Mm-hmm. And so what islands are, if you had a blank check and you wanted to go to all of them, give me a rundown of your top five choices.
All right, I want to go to all of them.
There are a lot of islands out there.
That's not the way it does. What I want to do is make archaeologists and people who are on these islands aware of what is normal and what is different, and use the hundreds, if not thousands, of eyes that are out there to identify on the literally thousands and tens of thousands of islands that are across the Indo-Pacific and find those things for us.
So you could mobilize all these tour guides like you did and all these different islands to keep their eyes open and don't think that if you've seen it, someone has seen it before.
Well, that's what's remarkable about Plowthing. I think even as an explorer, and I've been an explorer for 20 years, I think I was absolutely stunned. I mean, there was actually a picture of one of the second cave we found in a tourist guide from the 1970s. People had seen the bones, but no one had seen the bones, if you understand what I mean. They had not realized that what they're sitting on is that forbidden experiment, the perfect example of tiny humans, pygmies on these islands, that were, in fact, our bones are equal to the oldest bones ever found in Palau. So you're also looking at some of the first settlers of the Pacific, and they were sitting in front of everyone for decades and decades and decades.
Just remind us why we would not consider these just to be ancient pygmies.
Well, that's kind of what they are. Yeah. They are ancient pygmies, except what they're telling us, it's what these ancient pygmies are telling us that is important in this situation. They're telling us that a lot of the things that we used to consider as primitive to our species can evolve in our species under certain situations of isolation, inbreeding, and mutation.
What about Easter Island and all those, you know, abandoned pieces on there? Could they have been made by these kinds of folks?
Well, our current understanding of Easter Island is that it was only inhabited at a later date, a couple of thousand years after this situation on Palau. You got to remember this, that one of the problems you have of getting far afield in the Pacific is the distances are so vast, so that typically, in our understanding, most of the major settlement of the Pacific didn't occur until after the outrigger sailing canoe became commonplace, so really well after 2,000 years, and most of it after 1,500 years, once people could not only navigate, but could sail deliberately between that. What we're finding now is that some of these early occupations may have been strandings, survivor populations, people who inadvertently got lost on these islands. Now, Palau happens to be a particularly good case because the currents are actually make it quite difficult to get to, and it's why it was one of the last archipelagos that Europeans discovered. And thus it made it readily available for someone to get lost on it. It's just far enough away to get stranded on, but it was close enough that you could survive a long sea journey.
Mm-hmm. And now it's ripe for exploration.
Absolutely. There's more than 300 islands in the archipelago of Palau alone. I can tell you a little bit of a secret, that other caves have more of this stuff in it. Just wandering around on my last visit, I found more of these things. So, I mean, that island archipelago is going to be full of this kind of thing. And that probably means that the other archipelagos in that chain, extending the way from Japan down through to Yap.
Well, I have about 30 seconds, but then don't you want to keep people away from them so they don't disturb the science that needs to go on there?
Oh, I'm not arguing that people go in and collect bones. In fact, I think that's absolutely not true. I'm talking about getting experts, training them to see this thing, and then contacting other experts.
Well, I think you hate your job, Lee Berger.
I absolutely don't.
Sounds great. And I guess your wife can go into business now as an archaeologist.
Or at least an expedition chooser.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking time to join us, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Lee Berger, professor and reader in human evolution and the public understanding of science at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, South Africa. He joined us by phone from Washington. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, change gears and talk about a flu pandemic that has seized the city of Chicago. Well, the virtual city of Chicago, and what happened after that? Stay with us. We'll be back with the results. Don't go away. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.